When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Mentor, I'm Mark Boris. As more people rely on ready-made meals, growing your food is quickly becoming a dying skill. It's pretty wild to think that not many people know how to or where to grow a carrot in the backyard. Sarah Roney accidentally stumbled upon this gap in the market after pushing herself to complete burnout from her job in community services. For Sarah, she picked up a hobby out of necessity. She turned it into a side hustle, which eventually became her full-time business, and it's called In My Patch. Sarah's growing her business by helping others grow their veggies. It's a digital platform for beginners, or the Garden Morons Club, as she affectionately calls them. And Sarah's digital presence is what every small business owner should be trying to achieve. With over 260,000 on TikTok and 100,000 on Instagram, the community is huge and is growing. My chat with Sarah is an opportunity for you to hear how I think she can take In My Patch to the next level to scale the business from cottage beginnings to a digital gardening empire. So let's get into it. So Rani, welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Definitely excited to chat with you.
So you're over in WA now. What's it been like over there?
Do you know what? We have been super lucky so far. Sort of life is normal, but also not. Life is normal.
Now, we're going to talk about gardens or gardening. My dad's a mad gardener. Typical Greek, you've got to grow your own spinach and your herbs and your tomatoes and those sorts of things. Didn't have much interest in when I was a kid. But funnily enough, as soon as I got to an age where I had my own backyard, I started growing my own herbs and my own tomatoes and spinach. And I've become a bit fanatical about it.
You're kidding me. That gets me so excited.
No. had to learn it on the way, of course. I made lots of mistakes. And I'm always trying to read about it. But I'd like to know how the hell you got into this stuff.
Yeah, totally by accident. I think I've always wanted to eat healthy. So eating healthy has always been pretty important to me. I always, bought my veggies from like organic shops and small produce shops and tried to go like local where possible. But really I found my background's actually in community services. So my whole adult life I spent working in the community. So supporting people with disability, mental health, supporting carers, pretty much all different things to do with community services. And I actually, the last part of my career, I actually found myself really quite burnt out and stressed out. So I kind of turned to the garden as a bit of a hobby, like a bit of a relaxing sort of thing to do after work instead of like cracking a wine and having a little drink or too much to drink, heading to the garden instead and spending time in the garden. I just fell in love with it, got excited about growing food, and then I thought, like, people are missing out by not growing their own. And that's sort of what leaped me into starting my online page, I guess, was I just wanted to inspire other people to grow food.
Why does a hobby work for you? Like, because, a lot of people look at gardening as boring.
Yes.
They'd rather just go to Woolworths or whatever it is. They just can't see they can't see the practicality of it or they can't see the functionality of it.
Yeah.
Why does it help you?
I think it was almost, for me anyway, I can't speak for other people, but for me it was almost meditative. Like you're like really in the moment and you're focusing in on particular things or you're looking at things, you're touching things. So it can be, I guess, quite sensory. I think that's probably the word. But also, I guess, a sense of satisfaction when you actually do get to eat something that you've grown. And I guess if you're someone who likes eating, like if you like food, then growing your own food is definitely a good way to go because it tastes so much better. I don't know if you've noticed that from eating the food from your own veggie patch as opposed to the supermarket. It's like there's no comparison, I feel. I feel sad going shopping sometimes if I do need to pick up some veggies because I just think a lot of the veggies we eat from the supermarket kind of feels a little sad.
That word sensory is really important word, I think. There's a mystical event in a sensory sense in the garden too for me because there's a wonder of watching something turn from a flower and maybe seeing a bee in there and then the bee pollinates and that flower then sort of drops off and the middle part of the flower turns into a tomato or something along those lines. There's a sort of a mysticism of physics. I mean, I can be really sort of shitty from my week.
Yeah.
It immediately makes me run away or escape or park, whatever it is that was giving me the shits. It just completely takes over.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the, you know, I find spending time in the garden, even just the veggie patch, if I am feeling stressed or worried about something, it does just tend to slip away for a little minute because you really are honed in on what's happening. You know, before I came on the podcast, like, sure, you get a little bit of nerves, and I went in the garden for, you know, 15, 20 minutes and gave it a little water, and I just feel a little more zen.
And this might sound a bit weird, okay, but, like, my garden is my friend, and I got lots of friends in the garden. You know, I look after some of my plants like babies. Yesterday, I have a farm up in northern New South Wales, and I have a pine forest in the farm that was planted, a hoop pine forest, which was planted by the original person who got the grant of land by the state government back in the 1890s or whatever it was. And this individual planted a hoop pine forest. Why, I don't know. He might have been trying to produce timber. And there is one hoop pine in that forest today, which is not far from my house, which is about 100 foot tall and is at least 100 years old. And it's all been eaten out. And I was worried that it was going to fall and maybe hurt somebody. So I went through a whole series of people, called them in to look at this pine and tell me what to do. And eventually I got onto the, you know, the guy that everyone recommended, who's the you know, the king of this stuff, and normally cuts trees down, and he's an arborist. And he said, Mark, I said, and what would you do? And he said, Mark, I wouldn't cut it down. And to be honest, I was so relieved to know that he told me that this pine, whilst it is 100 years plus old, it's got great foliage, he said, and I won't get into all the technical stuff, he said, but it's been fighting back for the last probably 10 years. And he said, it looks like it's winning the fight. And I sort of thought, wow, I can't cut down a tree that's been fighting back and is doing it successfully. And actually filled me up with a great feeling at the end of my day. I was talking to the guy in my driving on the way home from work, and it actually made my day. I said to the guy, listen, mate, I normally expect you to come and tell me it's going to cost $5,000 to pull this tree down. But what you've told me is that this thing should stay. I individualize these plants and they sort of like become part of my community, become my mates. do you sort of experience the same thing?
No.
It sounds a bit weird, I know. I love my garden.
Wow.
I absolutely love all of the individuals in my garden. I get quite upset when something happens.
Wow. I'm so surprised, Mark. I know you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but I never would have picked you as a veggie garden man.
And not just because I'm an old grandpa either, Greek grandpa, it's because I love my garden.
Yeah, well, gardening or growing food's not for old people. I think that's one of the stigmas about gardening is people think it's boring and people think it's for older people for when you retire, but it can definitely be for everybody. But to answer your question, no, I don't have friends in the garden, but I did – like you, get attached to a pretty big tree at my house, which unfortunately for me did have to get removed, and I cried like a lot of times.
Do you think they have senses? Do you think they can sense our presence? Do you think that there's something going on in a physics sense?
Oh, you know what? I'm not a sciencey person. I don't know. I actually did a post on this the other day about, you know, asking the question, do you think talking lovingly to your plants helps them grow? And 90% of the people, or even like 99% of the people that replied said, absolutely, it's true. that plants do pick it up and do like to be like touched and interacted with like living things.
I don't know whether it's true or not true, but like my own survey is that I'm not saying they have a brain or anything along those lines. That'd be stupid. But I think that they do respond in a energetic sense, in a sense of energy. And also the more time you spend in the garden, the more you get out of it. Yeah. But also the more things that you see that can be done to assist the garden. But let's just move on to what you do in relation to In My Patch. I have to compliment you. Your website is brilliant.
Really? Thank you. That means the world to me.
Yeah, really.
Thank
good.
You.
It's brilliant. I mean, and no wonder you're doing so well, but let's just move through. When was the moment you decided to start to share what you're doing in the vegetable environment?
Yeah. So it's been quite a while now. So originally, like I said, it was just a hobby. So this is probably going back about 5 years ago that I started my veggie garden at home. Once I started harvesting my own food, like I've never been big on social media, didn't have a Facebook account. My Instagram account was just private and I didn't really share my weekend. I'm not a big sharer, but I actually started wanting to share like my successes, like, wow, look at this cauliflower. And I started posting pictures on my personal page to my friends and family and no one cared. No one was really into it. So I found the Instagram community, the gardening Instagram community, and just started as a way to wanting to actually inspire people to grow food, because I thought I'm self-taught, I'm not a gardener, and I thought if I can do this, or I work full-time, if I can do this and grow great food, then other people can too. And it started with just wanting to inspire people. I guess over time and as my social media grew and I became more confident in the garden, I thought I want to help people. And because I came from a place of being a beginner myself, I thought I can make this easier. Like, gardening can come across as really complicated and gardening books can seem complicated. And so I wanted to simplify it. And, you know, millions of people try to grow food every year and they fail and they give up, and I wanted them to succeed. So that's when I launched my first ebook that I put together. And I guess once I started getting feedback from that and how it helped people and getting tagged in photos, like, it's really simple. It was a really simple book. And that they come from my own experience. So I haven't jumped on Google and then just copied it in a book. They've come from my years of learning in my own garden. I just loved it. And then I guess as time went on, it just sort of evolved as I got more feedback from people online and lots of questions. I thought, okay, I might do like a little short course. So this was at the time totally a side hustle. So I was working 4 days a week. And doing my social media, writing my book, and did my mini courses on the weekends, on public holidays. Basically, every chance I get, I was either making content or writing my book or working on the website. Those courses got really great feedback. My husband actually said to me, "You really love this. Like, I loved seeing my customers succeeding." And he's like, "Why don't you do a membership?" And I was like a subscription-based model where people can pay you per month and you help them with videos each month or something like that. And at the time, that felt terrifying to me because it felt scary. For some reason, it felt scary. And now it's one of my most favorite things that I do is my online, it's called the Garden Morons Club. And it's about beginner gardeners and helping people grow food week by week. Which then morphed into my ultimate beginner course, which I only launched 2 or 3 months ago, a start to finish grow your garden, start a veggie patch from start to finish through a whole season.
Can we just go back to the Garden Morons Club? Yeah. Is that what it's called? And that's a subscription thing. How do you decide how long the ebook's going to be?
Yeah.
What am I going to put in there? What am I going to write about? What is a potential audience are interested in? How did you decide those things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because the core of the whole point of the ebook was to simplify it, I didn't want to just make a garden book layout the same as all the other garden book layouts. I wanted it to be easier. So then I knew I just wanted to separate it between cool weather veggies and warm weather veggies. so that there's two seasons instead of complicating it. You can't grow tomatoes, for example, in winter, or you can't grow broccoli in summer. We could, but they're going to struggle. They're not going to thrive. So for beginners, I just separated it. And then I guess I thought about all the vegetables that I had grown myself. I didn't actually plan it out like how many pages it would be or so much like what the chapters would be. I thought about the key things I wanted in it. So I wanted to talk about soil. I wanted to talk about the different types of veggies and actually like guide people on how to actually grow them with tips. I wanted to talk a bit about garden layout and also pests. Just wrote it all out in a Word document and then designed it in Canva. So I didn't have like a book design. It wasn't designed in like Publisher or anything. I did it in Canva.
Obviously, Canva is a good tool. And you put the content together, because I don't think an ebook needs to be a Pulitzer Prize-winning document, because it's not about the literature. It's about the content.
Yes.
And the pictures and the photos and the relevance, and probably importantly with something like this, if you're talking to beginners, is simplicity.
Yes.
And honesty. Because you're not a pro at this sort of stuff and it's your first one, there probably was a hell of a lot of honesty came out of it, and people love that. When you did the ebook, you've done the Gardening Morons Club, the subscription base.
I like how that makes you giggle when you say it, Mark.
It does, because and I tell you why it does. It's cute. Some people think they're a moron when it comes to gardening. I mean, self-effacing people say that about themselves. I'm just a dope in the garden. And we all tend to be quite critical of ourselves when something doesn't grow or doesn't work. You know, we take the piss out of ourselves a little bit. So I think that stuff works to me, that works. So you've got In My Patch, which is like your website. Then off the back of that, your business model is you sell subscriptions to one category of beginners, and then there's another one that takes you from beginning to end.
Yeah. So I guess In My Patch is built off my social media, and then the website has been developing over time. And I just want to say I'm so grateful for your feedback on my website. My husband and I made that ourselves. We haven't had any help with anything. We've just been learning on the fly.
I want to come back to that in the second half. I want to talk to you about that because I think the visual content is very good. The written content is good, but the visual content and the relevance of the visual content, the photography and the way you zoom in, you zoom out, I think that's really good. That's clever. And the fun that you have, you are building an algorithm, by the way, because this is about recipes to farm. And a recipe is an algorithm. An algorithm is just a fancy word for a recipe. Like a step-by-step process. And that's what you're building, algorithms, but you're making algorithms in a fun way. And you don't even use the word algorithm or recipe. You just use fun terminology. So we go to the break and come straight back.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm back with Sarah Rainey, and we have been talking about In My Patch and building a vegetable garden to some extent, which is like one of the things I absolutely love. I mean, I love this conversation. And we've been talking about, what I noticed was how natural you are in the videos and that appear on your pages, both social and website. How did you become so good at it, or did you do some training, or what do you use as your guidelines to be good in those videos?
Honestly, I haven't done any training. I haven't been to film school or done any editing class. I haven't even done any short courses in, or no crash courses on videography or anything like that. It's all been learning through trial and error and practice. So, you know, I've been creating content for 4 years now. It wasn't always video. It was when I first jumped on Instagram, it was just photos. It was much more simple back then. It's sort of morphed now more into video content. That's what makes you good at something, by doing it. I guess if you're someone who hasn't started yet, you need not worry what other people think. I didn't jump on and start making videos and necessarily care too much what other people thought. I was creating content that came from what I wanted to share with people. I guess over time they became shorter and sharper and better quality, but they weren't always fast and with movement, and my transitions weren't always as tight. If you look at some of my earlier stuff, you know, they were quite like long and wordy, and content evolves over time, or video.
So just explain to me, what are the things that you go through in your mind before you do your next video? What are the non-negotiables? You know, how I'm going to dress, how I'm going to look, how I'm going to talk to the camera. Where do I stand?
I don't write my videos out. So I don't script them out. Any of the videos that I make are me on the fly. Obviously they're edited, but I'll go out with a general gist, like, okay, today I'm going to harvest my broad beans, for example. So what is it that is going to make pretty shots? And a lot of the time I will go out there and be in the moment and create the content in the moment without that much thought. But there are key things that I do think about. One is energy. You know, people want to feel good energy, and I guess I'm lucky because the garden does give me such good energy. I'm happy out there. So, you know, I think about what kind of information is going to be helpful. You know, is the video just pretty, or is it aspirational? Is it entertaining, or is it giving information? I might do a video on, okay, this one's going to be like a beginner tip, and I'll do a video on tips, and that might be more me speaking than music. If it's something that's just aspirational or inspirational, then it tends to have the music aspect, not so much me talking. I used to use, when I started, I was using iMovie. So, you know, I was just clicking it together basically on my phone, and it's just sort of evolved where I am using proper editing software for my videos now. So I don't do them in Instagram, for example, or in TikTok. You're better off making them, I feel, externally, and then sharing them on the platforms, because that way you have the end video yourself. Whereas if you make them in the app, they belong to the app.
You said something very interesting about having plenty of energy. Like, I was just thinking to myself, if I was doing this, I might not do that. I might say, call myself the cranky gardener.
That would probably be great.
But play the role. Play the role. You know what I mean? Like, it's role playing. To some extent, you're probably playing a natural role. You're probably naturally the way you come across. But and I can actually be naturally cranky too, by the way. But is there an element of performance? Do you think it's important to have an element of performance, consistent performance?
I'll look at things like my energy level. So if I know, you know, I'm not going to be well on a particular day, I'll make that an editing day. I'm authentic. I'm definitely like authentically myself on my page, in my videos, in all my content. But I do definitely choose the days where I'm feeling like I have the energy to give to other people. You know, social media is a lot of work, and it's a lot of effort, and it's a lot of energy, and being present on there and being available for direct messages and replying to comments and being really active. I am picky and choosy with the days that I film, for sure.
So you've built a fairly good following on Instagram. You've got a really big following on TikTok. I mean, TikTok is sort of taking off, particularly for this. Your type environment is perfect. You've got your subscription base. Where to from here? What do you want to do?
Yeah, well, this is what I wanted to talk with you about. So I have my subscription model and my course. I guess there's a few things with it. Do you think it's better to roll with like a subscription model or a standalone product, or continue with what I'm doing and roll with both?
That's a good question to ask. Many years ago, when I was in business with Kerry Packer, that is, I had a similar sort of question to him. And he said, son, don't try and predict in a scientific way anyway, which is the best way of doing something when you're earning income from both outcomes.
Right.
He said, because markets make those decisions. They'll settle it at 60-40 or 50-50 or 80-20. He said, you'll never have any influence on how the market decides those, which is the best way to feed your audience. I mean, I'm talking about home loans, but of course you're talking about a different type of audience. And I've never forgotten that bit of advice. So market predictions in terms of market acceptance or what is going to work best for you in the future is something that is an external thing you can't influence and you can't control. So therefore, if it's working at the moment and you can feed into both and you have the time to do both, I mean, assuming you don't, you know, it's not sort of killing you, then my advice would be to continue on doing both as you are. Just see what emerges. And then as they emerge, let's say, for example, the course becomes the big money spinner and becomes more intense in terms of the demand for that product as opposed to, say, the subscription, then what that means you do is you don't stop doing one, but you just change how you allocate resources to one compared to the other. And you allocate resources, cash or capital or your working capital or staff or whatever the case may be. It's going to be money. It's going to be two things. It's going to be human capital, that's people, which you need to employ, and it's going to be monetary capital. That's stuff you're either going to borrow or you're going to get an investor or you're going to draw out of your own bank account if you've got it. So there, those two things need to be directed to where the demand is strongest. The point will come to you and it'll be obvious, but don't try and make the decision yourself, I don't think.
So to answer your question, in way of where I would like in my patch to go, I guess the closest thing that I can kind of explain it to would be, are you familiar with Kayla Istinez?
Yeah, I know them well. Know them well. They've been on the podcast.
Well, that's probably where in my dreams I would like to see it, where she has a community of people for fitness. I would love to have a massive community of people growing food. How I get there, I'm not quite sure. I don't know how you scale to that level. So far we built in my patch slowly, like tiny little steps, and I didn't like set this big goal and then go, right, these are all the things we need to do to get there. It's been very much like little baby steps every day or every week or every year in the right kind of direction to move the bus forward. We're at the point now, like we don't have any debt in the business at all. There's things that we'd like to do, like maybe it's an app or it's a product or like a physical product, or we need help with marketing. Like Thousand Marketing is where I feel like I sort of flounder a little bit in trying to market a digital product. I don't know if I should be pretending it's a physical product. I feel like a physical product would be easier to market than a digital product.
That's a good point. If you're talking about scaling your business, my question to you is, what is the product you want to scale using digital platforms? So is the product right now your courses, and is the product right now your subscription? Or are you talking about launching a physical product, like selling people, you know, seeds?
How do you decide whether that's a risk worth taking? Because at the moment we're small, it's just my husband and I. But yeah, how do we do the things we want to do in the business without going into debt? Or is debt okay?
Debt's definitely okay. Or invest and or, you know, dilution of your shareholding to bring an investor in is definitely okay. But it's only okay under certain circumstances. So, by the way, debt is cheaper at the end of the day than equity. So what I mean by that is it's always cheaper to borrow money and invest that money into your business than it is to give away equity in return for money over time. It's always cheaper. But not always can you get debt. So sometimes, you know, you can't go and borrow money because they don't want to lend you the money for whatever the reason is. Banks don't want to lend the money, whatever the case may be. And your only alternative is to get equity, that is to find investors. But before you can do either one, and you just mentioned, you know, should you launch an app? An app is just allowing a user to access the product through the app as opposed to having to go through the website. I mean, right now you seem to be pretty successful getting subscribers into your website. Whether or not you'll be more successful using an app to get people to access your products instead of going through the website, instead of, you know, Google, you know, searching you and going into your and finding you on your website. And, you know, I know Sarah Rainey and I want to go and buy her product, that is her courses and or her subscribe to her Morons course, Morons thing. Or it might be easier for me to download an app from the App Store and have that always on my mobile phone. And I can listen to what she's got to say through my mobile phone, but by again using her courses. The app's not that expensive to do, produce, to be honest with you. It's not that expensive to do. What is expensive is all the stuff in the back end, and that relates to the product, of course. And the product question that I asked you earlier, are you happy that your product is your digital, is the product that you have on the digital platform? That is courses. And the courses are about growing a garden and me paying for it. So, and then you could sell those courses, scale up your business by selling those courses through your app. The question is, will the app scale up your business? And what do I need? What other things do I need to scale up my business? So you probably need a head of digital in your business, or you may need to employ some people, which may mean you need to borrow some money or raise some money, because you've got to get the right individuals. You may need someone to run the marketing of your business, who will also, you might need somebody to sit at the back of to run the technology of your business, to make sure there is an app and the app sort of sings well and works well and rolls out properly. And that digital marketing person might be someone who also tells you about how to best boost your stuff on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all those sorts of places to build scale. So building scale is about a product, which I think you've got, content, which you're doing a good job of producing now, marketing that content and making sure the functionality that sits behind everything allows people to buy things by credit card and everything works properly in a digital sense. So that's an IT person. They're the two things I would be concentrating on, perhaps. Employing two people, an IT people, a head of technology and digital, and a head of marketing. I think the product you've got, and then I mean, those two people might cost you, I don't know, what they're going to, $150,000 a year, maybe more. But they might also cost you a little bit of equity. They might want a bit of part of the game, you know, part of the business to really cut them into the deal if you find the right ones after a period of time. Then their brief is to scale the business. And it may well be not even bothering about app. It might be just do Google Ads, something simple, and driving people to your website. It might be that. Probably would be better having an app because, to be frank with you, it's just more mobile friendly and it's more in my face. It's more present and it's always on my phone. I can always go and look it up. I don't have to go searching for your website and going to your website and looking at what you got on your website. And the app gives you other opportunities to have other interactions with the users. You want to be able to draw people into a place where, and this is a horrible word, but you can sort of trap them in a nice sense, put them into the funnel, you know, like coming in through the top and then they've got somewhere to go at the bottom of the funnel, and an app is very handy for that. Maybe what you need to do is you need to talk to someone who's a consultant on this stuff in the beginning, maybe not go and employ someone so you know who to employ. You don't know what you want. And what you want is sort of technical, and maybe you need to talk to a digital marketing organization and get their advice on it. And you're going to have to pay for it. But once you know you talk to digital marketing people, you might need to go and talk to IT consultant and say, look, what do I need in an IT architecture around my business? Then once you start to learn the language, you then know what to look for. And you can look for it through your various social mediums. You can put a call out. Look, I'm looking for a person on Instagram or wherever. I'm looking for this person. And, you know, you've already got hundreds of thousands of people who will be listening, and there may well be one person out there who's an IT person who would love to come and work with you. You have plenty of way of telling everybody.
That's a fabulous help, because my products at the moment, the Garden Morons Club and my course, is where my heart is. Like, it's actually helping people grow food, having a physical product to sell. Sure, might make me some money, but that's not what the heart of my business is. I like genuinely want to help people to grow food, and the way I can do that is with the products that I already have. I just need to be better at marketing them, I think.
And I think you've got to just boost it to a broader audience, not just the audience you have now. So it'd be good if you knew who your current customer is in a profiling sense. Do you have a profile on your current users, your current followers? Do you have a profile on your current subscribers, current course buyers? Once you profile them, share that profile with the social mediums that we all deal with and ask to buy from them people who fit that profile. Reach out to those individuals through digital marketing. That process, that build process, generally speaking, requires either a media buyer, or alternative, it may require somebody who can advise you on this stuff. And you know, a lot of the big digital marketing organizations can do that, or there's digital marketing individuals who can do that too. And I think too, you know, you're on digital at the moment, but I actually think to be frank with you, without being a bit weird, you come across as someone who could do a really good job with your business in traditional media environments.
Right.
I think you would be great, a beginner startup podcast.
My husband's actually been encouraging me to do a podcast for ages.
Well, I think you'd be brilliant at it. All of a sudden you've got a whole lot of material that you then can then put onto your TikTok and Instagram and various other places that you operate. You're filming once, you're sharing it on, you know, YouTube, you're sharing it on a podcast or vodcast. You've got the material to share on your Instagram and your website and your app. It's going to be a lot of about you, by the way. If at some stage you then get approached by a TV company like Foxtel or Channel 9 or Channel 7, you know that you're having the effect that you want to have, because I actually could see you doing something like that as well, which then would be perfect, because then you can drive a bigger audience that someone else is paying for back into In My Patch. And you've got to be very strategic and purposeful about this and step it out. Like you've stepped out to where you got to today. You've done a great job, really, being prepared to step it out over the next 10 years, and you may well end up there or somewhere close to there, you know, as to what you aspire to. But you're going to need a few people, I think. It's going to be about human capital.
You can't do it all on your own.
No, you can't. Look, you can try and be lean. Well, by the way, it's not, if you're making good money now and it's giving you a good living and you're happy, you know, like sometimes you've got to be careful what you wish for. You know, like what Kayla's done, she comes across as really chilled and relaxed, but I'm sure it's had enormous impact and impost on her and her relationship and her family to get to the greatness that she got to. You know, those things don't come without a cost. There's a big cost in those things. So sometimes we've got to, as I said, we've got to be careful what we wish for. But if you really aspire to that, and, you know, you've got to sit down with your husband and think that through, and as I said, it comes at a cost, at a personal cost, because everyone knows who you are. Your privacy sort of disappears a little bit.
Yeah.
And your life then becomes available for everybody to trade in. You become stock. I mean, I've been through it. You can manage it. It's manageable. It's not that bad, but some people need, you know, you just need to think it through. But I'm sure with patience and time and the right human capital, which requires financial capital to pay for it, and whether you borrow it or you bring investors, it doesn't matter. They're both the same outcome. One's just more easily accessed than the other. And if your story is good, I'm sure investors will come flooding in to back you. But just make sure you know exactly what it is you want out of all this.
Yeah, I want to help people grow food, and I guess to have a bigger impact. At the moment, I'm having an impact and a positive impact. I've helped thousands of people to grow food. I'd like to help a million people to grow food. You know, I would like to see food growing. You know, you see those apartment buildings? I think everybody could grow something, and I would love to see greenery on every one of those apartment buildings. You don't have to grow everything. You don't have to grow the supermarket like I do. Just a few things, like a handful of things, is totally doable. And I think that's what I would like to see.
You see, you just said something really important. I just want to help people basically have the experience that you're having, but in a way which is subject to their own constraints. You live in an apartment, it could be a balcony garden, whatever. You didn't say to me, I want to make a lot of money.
Nice.
And maybe I should be clear on this. Maybe what you're talking about when you talk about Kayla Itzenes and Sweat, you're not talking about selling your business for a fortune. What you are talking about is having an impact, like she did, on people training at home. You want to have an impact in people's lives. Therefore, it's hard to resist scaling up.
Yes, because it's not about necessarily about the money. Would it is. It's all, you know, it would be nice. You know, I've grown up my whole adult life on minimum wage, working in community. It would be nice to have that. But there's also something driving behind it. It's not just about that.
Well, on that basis, I'm sure you can raise money through investors. I hate the word mission statement, but it is a good purpose. I mean, helping people experience what you've experienced. Like, most people feel like they don't even want to try because they think they're going to fail.
Correct. Yeah. Or they think it's going to take too much time. Like, you know, having just one garden bed, like 10 minutes a day would be plenty to care for one garden bed. Like, you don't need a whole garden like what you have probably happening at your farm. Or like I've got, you know, 13, 14 beds. You don't need that much space. You know, it's not a massive time investment. I think people think you need to spend hours every day in the garden, and you don't.
I'd like to say one thing to you about that, because when I do look at your website, it does look like it's like very beautiful and it's like what everyone dreams of. You've got the corrugated iron or whatever that stuff is. The garden beds are raised and there's lots of them and it's all look perfect. But as you say, people live in an apartment, maybe a bit more of that sort of accessibility stuff would be good, just to make it look like it is within reach.
That's fabulous feedback.
I looked at what you do. I can do what you're, because I got the space, but not everybody has the luxury of, particularly over in the East States over here, more people live in apartments or townhouses than live in houses. I know West Australia is a bit different. Can I do it? How do I do it? And what do I buy? And where do I buy it from? And where do I buy the seeds? Or do I grow from seed? Or do I go buy seedlings? Or,
you know, it's interesting you say that point, because part of the section in my course is growing in pots and how you do the soil for pots and all that stuff. But maybe I don't get that across very well in my website, that it is suitable for that, you know, if you're in that situation as well.
But apart from that, do you have anything else you want to ask me?
Oh, gosh. Do you think it's harder to market a digital product than a physical product, or is it in my head? And then how would you go about marketing my membership and my online course? Because I don't feel like I do a very good job of that at the moment. I feel like that's my Achilles, and sales. I feel like sales is my Achilles. I'm very passive. We haven't done any paid ads, mainly because I don't have the marketing or the campaign around. It's all been very soft, gentle, passive sales.
I think you just answered the question. You need to do paid ads. You need to find out what that paid ad looks like. And the great thing about internet or digital marketing is that you don't have to go out and find a big advertising agency to build your campaign, and you put it on television and the campaign doesn't work and you've just wasted a whole lot of money building the production and then taking up the TV time. Good thing about digital marketing is you can build your own campaigns, try them out, try them yourself, and just make sure you've got the analytics to tell you what's working, what's not working. So a good digital marketing person is not someone who comes and says, oh, well, you know, we'll design a really fancy campaign. That's okay. But it's about measuring the campaign. So a good digital marketing person knows how to install the right tools to build the analytics around what works, and then tweak and change the campaign to make sure you optimize the campaign relative to the results you're getting. And it's a thing you can do by the hour nearly. So again, I think you need to talk to somebody, whether it's a consultant or ultimately an employee, someone who's very experienced digital marketing, which is someone who understands the campaign, understands the digital platforms, understands how to optimize the cost of everything you put on the platforms, and that whether it be through Google Ads or whatever it is, and then how to do the analytics and how to respond to the analytics really quickly to make sure you optimize the whole game. And the course is fine. It's a product. What you're doing is working. You just got to work out how to boost it. And the person who's going to boost it is the person who knows how to optimize it. And I don't think it's you. Have a look at what you think is a really good campaign now on digital that might have some West Australian roots or South Australian roots, and just start to do a bit of research about who uses who and who can I reach out to at least do a consult with you.
Yeah. Like, no one really knows about my brand or me at all.
You just need to speed it up a bit more, and as I said, build your network to include, first instance, a digital marketing person who can give you a full suite of advice, and then look at potentially talking to an IT person to make sure that once you start these campaigns and they are successful, nothing will break down at the IT level, at the technology level, to make sure that you can deliver what you promise in the campaign. And the rest of it is you acting.
Right, because you've got to be ready for the growth. Do a campaign and it's really successful, and you get 20,000 people sign up, you've got to have the back end in place. Otherwise, it's a disaster.
Meltdown, correct. Sarah Rainey, I really appreciate this discussion on vegetable gardens in my patch. I really love it. And it's a great website. You're doing a fantastic job. I want to thank you for coming on today, especially from West Australia. Hello to all my friends in West Australia who I haven't seen for a hell of a long time. Hopefully I'll be released into your territory at some stage in my life in the next 12 months. So, Rainey, thanks very much for being on my podcast today.
Thank you so much. It was so nice to get to chat with you. I really appreciate your time and your advice, and I definitely take it on board for sure.
Thanks for listening to The Mentor. Audio and production is by Jess Morley. And production assistants, Jonathan Leondis.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.